Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Bradley Staines, founder of Aguamar. Welcome, Bradley.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you very much for the invite. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to have you on as a guest. So Aguamar is one of the companies that you see all over the city with people abseiling down the sides, cleaning the windows, isn't it? But perhaps you can tell us a bit more about them, about what you do.
Yeah, of course. So it's actually Aquamark, Tom. Aquamark. So it's Aquamark. So it's Aquamark cleaning. And yeah, that's a company that I started in 2013. And to kind of condense it down, but it's I started off with just four employees. And then 2015, I got a good contract that allowed me to take on a lot more tough staff, but I didn't want the commitment. So I outsourced it to another bunch of people that were doing rope access at the time. They didn't want to grow as quickly as what I wanted to grow. They didn't have the ambition to grow. They wanted to stay as they were. They wanted to keep their main four. And I was like, do you know what? We need about 10. So either grow with me or I'm going to have to find somebody else. I took it in board, so I then recruited my own rope access guys and was training my existing team that I had to become rope access technicians as well. And then in 2019, I realized that I had to get serious about being serious. You know, I had to get really serious about it all and have a strategy. I never had any marketing plan or anything for up to 2019. I hired a marketing director. He came in, stripped the company right back, rebuilt it for me with systems and strategies and marketing analogy and the whole campaign of marketing campaigns and websites and such. And then that really fell us to a sort of like a really good growth for the next few years. And we're now here. We've got 41 people in total. I don't know how many vans, 13, 14 vans. We've got something like that. I don't deal with the vans, so that's why I can't give you the exact figure. But yeah, so that's kind of where we are at the moment. And we're just about to rebrand and relaunch vision and mission literally in a couple of weeks. So it's kind of, we're rebranding again to hopefully push us for the next sort of like 4 years,
Okay, perfect. So there's a lot we can dive into there, but how about we go back to the early days and what you were doing prior to starting this business and what kind of got you onto starting this business in the first place?
So I actually started in sort of like the window. I used to be a DJ, and then I thought, okay, do you know what? I've got to get a bit serious. I can't keep doing DJing every single night working the clubs around London. Let me get something a little bit more that's going to be suitable for a relationship and a family. So then I knew a guy that had a window cleaning round, and he was one of the first people to have the water-fed pole system that came into the country, I think, about 1996. And then he really done well out of it. He bought all these fancy cars and had a very nice life. And I was like, well, I want a bit of that. What do you do? He goes, I'm a window cleaner. And then when he told me like just how deep he goes into the window cleaning, the commercial aspect and all of the red tape and everything that you have to have in place to become a professional window cleaner, I was like, okay, I fancy a bit of that. That's a good challenge for me. I did then try to get there a bit too quickly. So I bought companies to get me there. I literally had zero business knowledge at all. I winged the lot of it. But after a while, 2017, I'd done a commercial cleaning company that got me into the commercial aspect. And then I thought I'd made it. I thought I'd hit the big time, and I had to liquidate a company in 2013. So, you can wing it so far, but then after a while, you do have to get the right people in your team to help you. Otherwise, you're just not going to grow properly or in the right way, in my experience anyway. So that's kind of how I got to 2013. In 2013, I thought, well, I've got to get serious. So I had a limited company, chartered accountant, and I went the right route. And I don't look back now because that was definitely the best decision for me to do at the time.
Okay. And so that first company that went to liquidation, was that one that you acquired yourself?
Yes. Yeah, it was. I had about four different companies and I put it under one umbrella. And then I thought, when you get to that stage, Tom, I'm like, I have nailed business. I'm flying.
Yeah. I bought a flat. I was flying them in nice holidays. I was like, this is easy.
And then I had a very hard lesson in 2013 when I owed the HMRC £95,000. And that was a very hard lesson because they don't mess around the HMRC. So yeah. So that was it really.
So then you closed that one, you started a new one, you did it all properly. You got to the point where it sounded like you needed a marketing person, you brought in a marketing person, and the marketing person sort of changed things up a bit. And then that is what fueled your kind of latest growth burst. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Because what it is it's great having an idea, but without a clear vision or a clear goal in sight, I think it's very hard to understand where you're going. And I think prior to 2013, I didn't really have that. I had money, objects, let me just get it as fast as I can by hook or by crook. Then after a while, I think, you know what? There's a lot in this plan in malarkey. I do have to start planning a little bit and having a bit of an idea of where I would like to go and where I want to be in X amount of time. So that was a real big learning curve for me. And since then, I kind of always said it like, it's almost like standing on stilts. Like I stand on stilts so I can kind of see above the noise. Let's say the day-to-day stuff is labeled as the noise. And then I can then see further in the distance and I can see the vision. And what I find is the noise, let's call it that, tends to get drowned out a little bit. Because you're focused on, well, it doesn't matter about the day, the one things that happen this day or the next day. We're going over there in the next 5 years. So these little things are tiny. It's not really an issue. But I think before then, I never used to have my stills. I never used to understand where I was going. So the day-to-day really did get, it dictated my moods and dictated my next decision. I didn't have an overall vision of where I wanted to go, which would then dictate my decision. It was literally reactive. And that was when I really learned a lot about being the difference between a proactive person and a reactive person.
Yeah. And so what was behind the changes that happened on the marketing side of things that fueled the growth? What were kind of the fundamental things that happened in order for you to then, presumably you've got a few big clients working with you now. What was it that made that happen?
It was strategy, Tom. To be fair, I had a strategy. I knew where I was going in the end. I had a clear direction of where I wanted to go. But also I was equipped with the tools to help me get there. Yeah. And that became sort of like a fundamental change, really. It was having that strategy, the tools. Because when you have that vision and that strategy, or you, let's say, go, I always say you begin with the end in mind. It's sort of like a Brad Sugar thing, but I think he nicked it from Jim Rohn. But it's like you kind of like start, you begin with the end in mind. Because therefore, and whenever I ask anyone to do anything for me now, I say, look, this is what I would like the result to be. How do we get there? Even if it's like just a consultant that comes and helps with a system or something, I say, I want my system to do all of this stuff. How do I do it? What do you need to get me there? And therefore you work backwards. So it's like running a marathon, isn't it? If you want to run 26 miles, you do a 4-month program and you start off in 1 mile. And by the end of it, you're running 18 to 20 miles and then you can do the marathon. But you've got a strategy, you've got a direction, you have a vision, you have a goal. And I think that was a huge difference for me because since then I've become very goal orientated. I do my goals sort of like, you know, sort of like annually, like 5-yearly, annually, and then, you know, quarterly and monthly and so on. And I think that was a big turning point for me. Certainly up to 2019, I knew I needed help up until that point because I was getting all this work coming in different directions. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm feeling overwhelmed, overloaded. And then I had a business coach from Action Coach, which is Brad Sugar's company, and Brian Doubleday. He was an awesome, he was a much older guy, bags of experience, and he really took me under his wing and helped me a lot. And he introduced me to Chris, the marketing director I had at the time, right, who then really changed so much for me.
And what did he change? What were the big things that made a difference?
It was understanding what the customer wants, understanding your target audience, your ICP. And I think that's kind of a real big key for anything, really, actually anything you want to achieve. Understanding who you're going to deliver, what you're going to deliver, and who's going to buy that from you. Because you might have zero buyers in the world. You might have a million buyers. You don't know. But until you understand who you're going to sell this for, who you're making this product or service for, it's going to be a lot harder for you to market it. And that was one of the things, because we spent a couple of months, we used to have an office in Malden, I don't know if you know, it's like South London. And we, Chris and I spent hours and hours every Monday, sometimes into the night, into the brilliant ballroom we had there, just understanding it. And we didn't, I didn't feel like I was getting anywhere. But what, now I look back, I'm like, actually, we were making massive strides. Because what he was telling me was, is understand your audience first. Who's going to buy your product? And then we can dress it up to what, you know, how you're going to sell it to them. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the big key learnings for me, was the fact that understanding your audience, what they want. Because if you're not going to resonate with them, yeah, then they're not really going to buy or connect. And certainly more so nowadays, it's understanding that connection with people, because there's so much AI stuff now, obviously not 5 years ago, but now there is. People want that human connection. So people are starved of that human element of things nowadays. So they really do want that authenticity and that personality and relatable, you know, sort of being relatable to that person, the audience. Mm-hmm. And I think, look, it's almost weird because that was 5 years ago or 6 years ago now. And it's serving me now, even more so now. Yeah. I think that's even more important now than ever before.
And so with that information and that insight about who your ICP is and what they want and what they're buying, how did that change your route to market? So how you actually got leads in the door, how you got people interested in you, how you got people to hear about you?
Well, first of all, up to that point, I never had any email marketing or website or anything. So I bought all this, I think at the time it was about, I think it was about £1 million, I think it was. I'm not that business. So I'd done all of that with zero marketing, no website, no email marketing. It was all literally word of mouth. That's all it was. So first of all, Tom, one of the things was understanding about marketing. You know, he told me about marketing. He used this analogy because I said to him, I said, I hear sales marketing. Is it the same? And he's like, well, look, he goes, if you look at it like a football analogy, I used to be really big into football. And he goes, all the team do all the nice passing and they move the ball from the goal, from the goalkeeper through to the defense, the midfield, the wingers. And then the sell, that's the marketing team, and the sales team are the strikers that come in and tap it into the net. Mm. I was like, that's actually a really simple way of looking at it. Thanks very much. Yeah. And I didn't understand any of that up until that point. So I guess to answer your question, one of the things was, one, the importance of the message. And you only get the right message that's going to resonate once you understand the audience that you're going to send it to and their pain points, but then also being consistent with it. There's no point doing one email marketing campaign, like one email a year. Where's the consistency? I think it was Daniel Priest who said that you need like 11 points of contact nowadays. So it's kind of like, you know, and that could be on social media, it could be one post, it could be a video, it could be a long form, short form, whatever it is, or even a telephone call, but 11 points. So if you're doing one email a year, you've got another 10 points to somehow get out.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of like what I really understood. That was one of the biggest things, was the consistency. But you can't have the consistency until you know what you're going to be consistent about. And that was the foundational stuff that we've done that was really helpful. Mm.
Great. Okay. And so shifting gears a bit, obviously, you know what I do, I'm a finance person. So If we talk a little bit about the finances, you've obviously grown very quickly. One of the biggest challenges that, well, all businesses have really as they grow is how to grow without running out of cash, and making decisions like how much they can invest in new marketing, how much they can afford to put into new salespeople, when to hire versus when to hold on to cash. How have you made those decisions over the years? And have there been a few close points where things were a bit touch and go?
So that's actually a really good subject to talk about, actually, Tom. And you'll probably be able to, if I list some stuff off, you'll probably be able to tell me if it's right or wrong, or even I've missed any. The importance of finances, and they say it's the blood of the company, but until you've really been into liquidation or bankrupt, or you've come bloody close to losing all of your years of hard work, I don't think people really understand the depth of that saying that it's the blood of the company. So. I've gone beyond close. I've gone way past close. I had to close it. And two, what happened was, have you ever read the book Traction by Gene Wickman? Yeah. So he talks about sort of like a visionary and an implementer, doesn't he? Yeah. So I'm the visionary. I'm the one that goes along and say, right, I want to build these 10 rockets. Do you know what I mean? Oh, what, with 10 quid? You've got no chance, Brad. Okay, okay. Well, how do we get more than that? So it's kind of like that you need an implementer to carry it out. But so what it is sometimes you need that person to kind of rein you back. Now, up until about 3 years ago, I didn't have that person. So I was telling you beforehand, I was literally not really tracking my money. The money was coming in. I thought, okay, this is great. I'll just spend as I go. We haven't got any external investors or anything like that. We've got no overdrafts or anything like that. It was kind of whatever we had, we spent what we had kind of thing. So then what happened was I then recruited a health and safety officer, which she came in from being 30 years at Arriva, the bus company. And so she was kind of coming to the end of her working career and she really liked what we were doing. And she was like, do you know what? She came in as a consultant to begin with and said, do you know what? I'm actually looking for full-time. I can come in and help you. I'll be operations and so on. I can pass my 30 years of knowledge onto Aquamark and see what I can bring. Okay, great. And it was invaluable. It was the best bit. It's still the best bit of money I spend every single month is her wage. It's amazing. She got really aggressive about the finances because I was running them and I'm a nightmare with finances, Tom. I'm terrible. as I'm sure many business owners are, because we see the vision, we're like, yeah, we've got to go for that. So she probably reined it in and she checked the bank account 3 or 4 times a day. And then if I spent 79p on a tea, back when it was 79p, she would literally be like having a go at me. She goes, because that's not in my budget. You didn't tell me you were going to send a 79p. It was that strict, Tom, right? Yeah. So then what happened was, beginning of last year, we came close to that growing too quickly scenario. We got given loads of contracts. With our recruitment process, people have to go into a 12-week program, a mentor program, before they then probably become Aquamark full-time employees. We didn't have the time to carry out our trial-infested session of recruiting people. We didn't have a time to do that. We bombarded them in. We recruited 9 people to cover this sudden influx of work. And within a month and a half, we end up getting rid of 8 of those 9 people. And by now, all those 9 people have got that. All done gone now. But they were just the wrong people because we rushed the recruitment.
Yeah.
But with the finance question, what happened was we then had to go into invoice factoring because we weren't getting paid enough. But what happened was we were basically like, Nettie was like, she was budgeting as much as she could, but the money wasn't coming in as quick as what we needed it to go out. So we came very, very, very close to that whole growing too quickly thing and almost went the other way. But then towards about the end of February, I had a bit of a bad vibe. And I was like, right, and I called an emergency meeting with like me and my 3 managers. I was like, we need to have a serious meeting like tomorrow morning. Something's not right. And then it hit us in March because it's always delayed. Ours is about 30 days delay and everything that we do. And then it hit us in March and we had a terrible March. And then we had a terrible May. It was both negative. Nettie was pulling her hair out. She was going into like meltdown. But then what happened was the year and a half before where she was being so accurate with the figures, we had a selection of invoice factoring companies that we picked from. People wanted to lend us money. Because 2 years before that, I couldn't even get an overdraft for like 100 quid. Do you know what I mean? It was insane. So all of a sudden, if I was running the finances last year, we probably wouldn't be here today because I wouldn't have been able to get that financial support. But because Nettie checked the figures day in and day out and budgeted for every single penny. And when I say every penny, it really was every penny. I round up. If I say, that's 500 quid, she goes, no, what is it exactly? I said, it's £489.10. And she goes, what's the pence? And she literally checked every penny. And before I was thinking, oh my God, this is crazy. She's like, anal with this. What's going on? But then it all came to the fore at the beginning of last year because it pretty much stopped us from going under because we grew too quickly and we needed that financial support. And because we had such clear bookkeeping and our credit rate was going higher and higher, we were able to pick the best deals. Whereas 2-3 years before that, I couldn't even get an overdraft for like a few grand. Do you know what I mean? Like it was crazy. So that's the difference of the power of monitoring your finances because it can either make you or break you.
Yeah. Good story. Good story indeed.
Yeah.
And so you have management accounts that you look at every month and you sit down with the team and make decisions based off that information?
Weekly. We sit down weekly.
Weekly.
Every Monday afternoon, we have a finance meet. So we see, we look at what's coming in, what's going out. So we have Jenny takes, we call that income, age receivables, and then NetE does with age payables. And then, but NetE kind of monitors both. But Jen tells us any invoices that are 30, 60, 90 days, you know, sort of like, where are we at with all of them? That whole thing. And then NetE does the exact same thing. NetE, she gives an entire plan, a 3-month plan of what's all the age payables. She gives you a plan of when, what day she's going to pay the invoices. Every, she puts them all in dates. And every Thursday, she does all the wage runs. And then the Monday, she reconciles it all and she tells me the update and everything. So it's weekly. And then on the first Thursday of every month, we review the previous month, how we did, the good, the bad, the whole lot. We go through the entire P&L, the balance sheet, everything. We go through everything. So every month, she's on it. But before, I used to think it was a chore. Now I fully respect it. Since about February last year, when we had to do an emergency, say, look, we need money. And we were getting bombarded with options. Do you know what I mean? It's brilliant. And that was all because she was diligent with checking every single penny daily, weekly, every time. You know, that's the power of it.
Well, that's a very, very good story to share on this podcast.
That's right.
So, is there anything else that you want to share with the audience before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, so what I found was, if I may, so I'm a bit of a new venture. So I too have a podcast. So, it's called Working On It. It's called, it's to help service-based business owners grow the business or grow the management team so they can have the business run without them and buy back their time to live the life that they want. So, but from that, I got a few business opportunities come my way. And two of them I turned down because I didn't feel that I could bring any value. But one particular one was very, very good for me. And what it is about a year ago, I started doing social media, LinkedIn. It was about a year actually to the day that I got a bit active on LinkedIn. And I realized the value of it and building network and connections and so on and relationships. But what I done was I got quite a lot of messages come through to me from other service-based business owners saying, look, Brad, how do you have this day off? How do you have this team? What do you do? Build a trust and all that. And I was helping them a little bit, but then ended up taking quite a bit of my time. But what I'm doing is now, a new venture is now, we're opening up like an academy, like a club for service-based business and trades businesses. And we're having sort of like once a month catch up, etc. We'll be launching it in the next couple of weeks, but it's pretty much built, ready to go. And what it is to help service-based business owners and trade businesses understand, fast-track what we've experienced, you and I, building business, etc., all that sort of thing. Because I'm also going to partnership with Chris Archer, who also has bought and sold a few businesses for a few million quid. So he understands all the trials and tribulations you have to go through and the experiences and the skills and the tough times of running the business. We're going to be sharing that knowledge. So it was kind of like that. So that's why it was great to be on this podcast, really, and hopefully many more, because we just want to help, you know what I mean? Because we understand it's tough. It's bloody tough. And you're in the trenches alone a lot of the time. But if you can build a good team around you with good knowledge and good experience, then you'll do the right thing and you will build the business that you want, you know? So eventually it builds the life, isn't it, that you want, in this sense.
Exactly. Brilliant. Well, we'll make it very easy for anyone to get in touch.
Thank you.
Matt. And yeah, as you said, being a business owner, a lot of the time it can be a very lonely place and you've got no one else to bounce these sorts of ideas off. So if you can be part of a community where everyone in it is going through or has been through those same challenges and they've got over them somehow, or you can hear from people you have, then it can add a huge amount of value. So yeah, we'll make it easy. Get in touch with you. And yeah, thank you very much for being a guest.
No, thank you, Tom. Well, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Enjoy it. Thanks, Bradley. Cheers.
Cheers, Zen.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.